Hello, Looking Up listeners. This is once again Josh Elstro, editor and audio producer for Looking Up. In the interest of keeping our staff safe and healthy and to help reduce the spread of COVID-19, I'm still the only member of the Looking Up team coming into this studio as we continue to quarantine until further notice. To stay connected to our listeners during this time, we're revisiting some of our favorite guests and episodes in the Looking Up library until we can return to safely producing new content in the studio. It's a great way for new listeners to get into the show, too. So, whether revisiting or hearing it for the first time, we hope you enjoy Dean and Anna's February 2018 conversation with host of NPR's Science Friday, Ira Flatto. We will be returning soon with brand new content. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, and as Dean would say, keep looking up.
Hey, Anna, Do you know what the oldest constellation is?
No.
Wait a second. Wait, what's your zodiac sign?
As discussed, it is between an Aries and a Taurus.
Taurus is the right answer. Taurus, you got it. You're a Taurus.
Okay, cool.
That was the first constellation ever invented. The oldest.
Oh, invented. Okay.
One of the oldest works of human art is a depiction of a bull in a cave in France. And the Hall of the Bulls dates back to 15,000 BC. Somebody crawled down in this cave, painted a bull on the ceiling. And it corresponds exactly to the constellation Taurus the Bull.
Wow.
And so you're part of this history as
I'm
a Taurus.
I'm excited. Yeah.
It's awesome.
This is huge.
17,000 years of people have been looking at the stars and making pictures out of all that stuff.
Wow. It's amazing.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, we're excited to welcome the man who made science on the radio so cool, the host of Science Friday, Ira Flatto. So I'm excited to talk to Ira today.
Oh, yeah.
I go on the first name basis, Ira.
Yeah.
But you know something that I think is really important? I know you're going to ask him about this, too. Is constellations. I got a lot of opinions.
I know. this is your show. You really wanted this one here.
I did.
And because you have a big issue with constellations.
Well, first, let me say, I really like mythology and all that stuff. It's very cool.
Yeah.
However, important, the constellations are crap. Can I say crap on the show?
I think so.
I mean,
we can bleep it probably.
Yeah, just bleep me, guys. But come on. it's a little lazy.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
Don't you agree?
There's some issues with some of the constellations.
I think? sorry, hold on.
Well, so, all right.
I'll calm down.
Boy, I need to relax here, too. I'm thrown from loop here. I feel like I'm being heckled on stage or something. This is what I do. It's talking about constellations, Heyman. This is what I do for my job.
But you have to agree that they're a little far-fetched.
No, you're absolutely right. When you look at the constellation Cassiopeia, for example.
Yeah, she's on my list.
These five stars that look like the letter M or letter W. How in the world is that a queen of Ethiopia sitting on her throne?
It's not.
Well, but you got to go back. So all the constellations that we talk about today go back to the ancient Greeks. So 2,500 years ago, people are sitting around watching the stars.
They don't have iPads.
They don't have iPads.
That's
the thing. What are you going to do for fun back then in 2,500?
Start wars.
Yeah. And so in between wars during your peaceful times, you're done, planting the crops. It gets dark. You come back in. You kick back and you watch the stars. That was like their TV set. That was their Netflix. They would tune in.
Well, the reception was fuzzy because... They just don't.
Exactly.
But okay.
So, but they had to spice things up. They say, okay, well, so wait, look at those stars up there. Like, hey, man, doesn't that look like Bob? Bob down the street. It's like, oh yeah, there's his dog too. Cool. Oh my gosh, look. And there's a bird. And there's
a pig stretch.
But this is what they did.
I get it.
And so then you got to make up the stories to spice things up with this of how all this stuff happened. And so the Greek mythology that came out of this, man, these are some good stories. I mean, these are not like PG stories.
No.
These are
that's true.
Saucy, racy, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Like soap operas.
Oh, they would make soap operas today look
like blush.
Like nothing. nothing. And so that's where it all comes down. And so the constellations we have today basically the Greeks had the best stories, and they got passed down from generation to generation, and now they're part of our thing, whether we can see them or not.
Yeah.
And that is the tricky part.
Mm-hmm. Well, you one that I will say I'm okay with is the Big Dipper.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like a I would have called it ice cream scoop, but fine with Big Dipper.
Yep.
And so can I all like whenever I try to look and see it, I can sometimes find it.
Yeah.
But so sometimes of the year I can see some, and then sometimes I can see others.
Right. So the Big Dipper is one you can see most often. So almost all year round you can see the Big Dipper
and the Little Dipper
because
it comes
right.
See, I need them. I need to be connected.
That's
like
right.
Those are.
That's right. Yeah. So they're called circumpolar stars because you can see them all around the whole year because they circle the pole star.
Circumpolar.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
And then the ones you can see from different seasons, like Orion that you see in the wintertime, or Leo spring, or Taurus. So you'd see in the fall, those are seasonal constellations that you associate with different times of year. But the Big Dipper, let's go back to that for a sec. Because now you call it the Big Dipper, and pretty much only Americans call it the Big Dipper. You go to other countries, they take those seven stars of that spoon shape.
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's hard to picture something else now that you've got Big Dipper.
They don't call it like, okay.
No, if you go to different cultures, like fishing cultures will call it a fish hook.
A fish hook?
Yes. Island nations, they call it a fish hook. In England, they still call it the plow.
Mm.
Other cultures call it the thigh of an ox, a stretcher, a cart, a wagon.
Are you serious?
A coffin, a drinking gourd, a bear, everything. These are all the different things.
Taking some liberties.
Well, so now the question is, so why do we call it a Big Dipper, other than it looks like a Big Dipper, of course.
Or a hat, I guess, if you turned it our way.
Oh, a hat.
Anyway.
With a big brim on it. Oh,
yeah,
I
like
it.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
But
derailing the conversation.
But so what we find is that different cultures value different things, and so they saw them different things up in the sky. They saw things up in the sky that they valued on Earth.
Americans do like dips.
Americans love utensils that can get food in our mouths. That's what we value. And so that's why we call it the Big Dipper.
I mean, dips are delicious, but you're right. If I could shovel them into my mouth, even better.
Yeah. Like,
you're so right.
Way better than a coffin,
that's
for sure.
Yeah, who needs a plow?
A plow.
And a cart.
Right.
So why aren't there any new ones?
Well, yeah.
I mean, are we just done? We found all the stars in the sky? Like,
we are pretty much done. Well, so the astronomers decided, okay, we're going to go with the Greek traditions.
Yeah.
They seem to be the coolest. You know, they were the cool
says
kids.
Says the Greek person.
Says the Greek person here, yeah.
Okay. No, totally. Coincidentally, you think that's totally fine.
Totally unbiased.
Right,
Yeah, but, you know, they picked the right choice. But,
man.
So about 50 of the constellations go back to Greek traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 88 total. There were new ones that were put in to fill in some of the spaces. Like there's the big dog Canis Major and the little dog Canis Minor. But there's some stars in between that are very faint. Like you have to be way out in the middle of nowhere to see them.
Oh, okay.
And so a guy in the 1500s and 1600s said, well, we need something in there. Let's throw a unicorn in there. So there's a unicorn.
Just making stuff up.
And a bunny rabbit. And then we have even more modern constellations like the telescope and the sextant and the quadrant and all these other
things.
Are you
going to bring up the football? I knew you were going to do it. I'm just like.
Now, those are all the official ones. So now.
Oh, this is unofficial.
Now we get to the unofficial ones. So,
okay.
So what I like to encourage people to do is make up their own constellations. If they see shapes up there, go for it. Knock yourselves out. If you see like the cell phone up there, call it the cell phone constellation. If you see
a rectangle?
Yeah. Well, it's a rectangle. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, there's a lot of rectangles up there. So you have a lot to choose from. So the one that I like at this time of year, it is mostly called the winter circle or the winter hexagon. It's the eight of the top 20 brightest stars are in one section of the sky. So
winter
is awesome. Yeah. Because you get, this big ring of stars around the constellation Orion, who's easy to identify with the three stars in a row for a belt.
Mm-hmm.
But these stars that are around Orion are so bright and dramatic, and they form kind of a hexagon shape. But since it is, winter, I always associate it with football. And so I think that shape looks exactly like a football. I want it named Winter Football from now on.
Is that just like how you're going to decree it?
Well, yeah. You know,
we're going to follow another Greek because yeah. they're the coolest. Well, and we're going to make it called the winter football.
Going by precedent, essentially, the Greeks knew what they're doing. So, I mean, I
you're a football fan, so you know what a football looks like.
That's true. I think it really looks like. And it's giant. It's a huge formation.
Humongous.
So this football goes from one side of the sky, the star called Sirius, the brightest mm-hmm. star in the sky, to this other star at the top of the sky where the zenith is called Capella. Mm-hmm. And two pointy on two ends, round in the middles. Yep.
Perfect.
So, but you can make up any constellation wow. you want. If you go out there, you see some stars yeah. up there, make it whatever you want.
You know what I realized too, just like yesterday,
what's
and I've had the car for 2 years, 3 years, is that I have a Subaru
mm-hmm.
and Subaru has a constellation as their logo.
Exactly.
I did not know that.
Yes. Which constellation? Well, it's not
Pleiades.
A constellation. It's the Pleiades. That's right. If you look at your Subaru logo, it's six stars in this interesting little pattern.
Yeah.
That's the Seven Sisters star cluster, the Pleiades.
Very exciting.
And that's what Subaru is in Japanese, is their name for that cluster of stars.
That's nice.
And you know where the Seven Sisters can be found?
In the
On
sky.
The back.
On the back of
Taurus.
Really? Okay, you just like brought that full circle.
See, this
is insane.
You think we're just doing this on the top of our heads?
It's all planned out.
Well, I am really looking forward to this interview because I get to turn the tables on Ira Flatow. I've been a guest on Science Friday a few times, but now he's here with us and he's our guest on Looking Up. Ira, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I'm going to throw an oddball question right away at you. Anna and I have been talking about constellations, and so we want to ask you, what is your favorite constellation and why?
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, good.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's it. I've been watching this for years, Orion. Orion's my favorite constellation.
Good answer.
It's got all these pointer stars on it, and it's got one of my favorite nebula in there, and it's great.
See, I told you, we're talking to a real science guy.
You're
this
right.
Is good.
It's yeah. It was like no hesitation at all. Orion, that was it.
Yep, that's right.
Pretty good.
Oh, man. So, yeah, now we're outnumbering Anna now. We're going to bombard her with so much science. Anyway.
So much science.
Well, we wanted to know, what were you going to ask?
Yeah, so I was curious.
I got my question
the important stuff's out of the way. That's right. Thank goodness. But I was curious how Science Friday kind of got started and a little. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, I'll give you the short answer because there's a longer answer.
Okay.
The short answer is I had the idea for a weekly science show. And I got some money from the National Science Foundation for the idea. And I went to NPR
mm-hmm.
and said I'd like to do a one-day show. And they said, well, we don't have one-day talk shows. We don't have a talk show nor a one-day talk show. What are we going to do the rest of the week, and how do we get stations interested in carrying a talk show? So I said, okay, I'll try to work on the other days of the week, but, you can work on getting the stations interested. And, well, Saddam Hussein sort of bailed me out on this because the Gulf War started in 1990, and NPR started a daily talk show. So they had a slot open, and that war didn't last very long, and the stations now got their appetite whetted for a daily talk show. So I said, remember me? They said, okay, we'll give you Friday. And I said, ooh, I like that, Science Friday. Sort of rolls
Whoa.
Off your tongue, and they created a show to fill the other 4 days of the week, and we had Friday. So that's the short answer.
Science Monday awesome. Just doesn't sound the same. So they gave you the right day at least. That's
mm-hmm.
good.
Kick off the weekend.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's right.
Well, so you've been doing this Science Friday since 1990 then, 1991?
1991. We're in our 27th year. We'll
wow.
keep doing it till we get it right.
Practice makes perfect, right?
That's exactly right.
Well, so after all these years, what is your favorite science topic that you when you have all these different guests, all these different experts? What's your personal favorite?
Well, my personal favorite is cosmology.
Another good answer.
Oh my gosh, this is
like,
too much.
Boy, Ira really knows his audience here. This is good.
Well, my other favorite is the microbiome, which is in the other, this is about your guts, the bacteria and whatever that live in your guts. So we have everything covered from tiny to big. But I've been, because I love astronomy and I always ask cosmologists how the universe started, where we're going, what it's made up of. And they don't know. That's the good thing. See, when they don't know the answers and they like like to guess. That's why I love it so much, because no one's right, no one's wrong on it.
You know, you can tell a cosmologist who's the optimist, who's the pessimist as to what they say the end of the universe is. That's how you can tell what kind of people they are, too, by the way.
I'll keep that in mind. Yeah. I'll keep that in mind.
So in the 27 years you've been doing the show, are there any, I mean, I'm sure you've had tons of great guests, of course, Dean included, but.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anybody that was really remarkable or surprising or just maybe a favorite guest that you can think of?
I think the most surprising answer I got was from Jane Goodall, you know, the primatologist.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the show, and we had been on for an hour, and I got so engrossed in talking with her, I forgot to open the phone. So I finally opened the line up for about 2 minutes we had left, and the caller said to her, is there a primate yet out there remaining to be discovered? And she said, yes, there is. And he said, well, when are you going to find it? And now I know that they knew it. I said, time out. Am I the only one not in this? And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. Are you thinking about Yeti, the abominable snowman?
Bigfoot, something
like that.
Bigfoot, exactly. Sasquatch. She said, yes, I am. My director says, time's up. We ran out of time to talk about this. but so she came on in subsequent years and still believed it and still talked about it. And I think that's the single most on-air little surprise we've ever gotten. We've had off-air surprises like Oliver Sacks used to come on and talk about, you know, the brain, but we once told him that we had to cut his interview short because we wanted to interview some guy in a boat in the South Pacific looking for a giant squid. And we're sorry about that. And he said, are you kidding? That's my favorite subject. I said, come on. He said, no, it is. Can I interview the guy with you? I said, absolutely.
Wow.
And sure enough, on a Friday, he shows up in his giant squid T-shirt. He's got two squids, rubber squids in each hand, squeezing them ready to go on the air. And, you know, and I learned years later that, you know, he has his whole apartment was filled with cephalopods. And when we created Cephalopod Week on Science Friday, we had already go-to guy to show us all his tchotchkes he had about cephalopods.
So. Wait a second. There's a cephalopod week? Nobody told me about this?
Oh, yeah. There's a cephalopod week every year.
So then the other thing, when people think of Science Friday, I think they think of, you know, new technologies that are out there. There's some, you know, you're kind of, you can give us the scoop. What's new that's out there that's really exciting?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, technology now crosses all different boundaries. For example, technology crosses into biology. So you could have, I think one of the most exciting things in biotechnology are stem cells. Mm-hmm. You know, we're learning every day about another advance in stem cells that might cure this disease or ail that kind of ailment using stem cells or immunotherapy. Those are the sorts of things where the body cures itself if you tweak up the immunology, the immunity response of the body. Of course, there are technical things like self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they going to become a reality? Are robots going to take over? Well, these are all really interesting things that we talk about that are just right there on the horizon.
I know. Once they can start climbing stairs, then we're in trouble.
This is not a new idea. We were just celebrating the 200th. This is the 200th anniversary of Frankenstein, the novel.
Really?
200 years ago,
Oh,
wow.
And so as a part of our book club, we're reading the original Frankenstein, and it's nothing like the movie.
It's
so much better. Yeah, it's so much more. It's so much more thoughtful. The Frankenstein monster is intelligent. There's an annotated version now about it that sort of takes you through the science and the discussion that's going on between the characters, and they really are talking about issues we talk about today. About what is life? Should we create it? What's the ethics behind all of this sort of stuff? It's all in there.
Yeah, it's a really advanced book for its time.
I'll have to put it on my list.
Know. We'll put it on our list.
That's right.
Well, and I don't think of that with technology versus and technology and health and prolonging our lives. And you just think of, you know, computers and
flying cars.
But
we're all gonna have a little computers in ourselves soon if we don't have them already. You know, the bionic man and woman is here. That's a little more than $6 million, I think, but It's that sort of stuff is around us.
Well, the other question that I think a lot of people have is, okay, so the show's called Science Friday. What do you do on the other days of the week?
I spend my time keeping that day of the week alive.
Right. I figured it wasn't your napping the whole time.
This is public radio. You know, we have to go out and raise money. We have to raise money to keep Science Friday going, like you guys have to raise money to keep what you're doing going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's kind of challenging now because this whole political atmosphere is drawing away funding that might be going to creative things like Science Friday. People are spending their money on the next election cycle instead of spending the money on funding us or other kinds of nonprofit organizations. It's really an interesting time we're living in. So that's more challenging than usual. And also, we're also trying to put the show together during the week. You know, I was, before you called me, I was relearning calculus. I was online doing a YouTube.
Man.
I had such tough problems with calculus in college. So I'm trying to keep abreast of it so I might be able to read something about relativity or the universe that's to understand a little bit more of it. And I just learned something that would have helped me go through calculus 40 years ago in college.
Just now.
In 10 minutes, I learned. Where was I missing that day in class? How did I miss this key point? If I didn't know, you add the X, you subtract the 1. That's what I did miss that, you know. It would have... I would be, you know, have a lot less gray hair today if I had been in class and had missed that sort of thing.
Wow. So you're the perpetual student. You're always learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what makes this job so great, because it's like the old saying says, if you love your job, you'll never work a day of your life.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
And if this is a daily a learning experience. We don't have a day off. Our staff, we talk about this, where we're constantly looking for science stories. We're always bumping into them. So it's a wonderful lifelong learning experience.
Well, it's a great show, and you brought so many people along with you on this journey. And we want to just thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and kudos to you guys for what you do, too.
Oh, and we must ask, you could have us on your show sometime.
Yeah.
You know, shameless plug, you know.
Maybe like a slow week or something.
Well, right. Dean, you've been on. We could have you come on. Give me, like I say to my staff, pitch me a story. Let's
all right.
Talk about
ooh.
Send all right. me a pitch. We'll do it.
We'll work on it.
Totally.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, man. Take care.
We've been talking with Ira Flato, host of the national radio show Science Friday. Ira, thanks so much for your time today.
Well, at the Cincinnati Observatory and through all of Dean's outreach visits, we hear some great questions. We get some great questions from kids. And we think a lot of them are questions adults would probably want to ask or maybe be curious about as well. And today I have one for you, Dean, that is actually a letter we got.
A letter?
Yeah. So we, I guess, had done a program. You had done a program. And a second grader named Autumn wrote to thank us for, I say us like I did anything.
Right, you helped.
Right, to thank the education staff. And I want to read the entirety of this little note, but the end is where her question
is. Cool,
are you ready?
Cool. Yeah.
This is like, okay. I loved this. So that was hilarious. So it says, it was awesome when you showed us the telescope. I like when it moved. Mm-hmm. It was cool when you showed us the telescope. I don't know how to describe it.
she wrote, I don't know how to describe it.
And okay.
It is indescribable.
Yeah. She says, I was happy because me and my friend got to eat on the floor.
Eat on the floor?
I think they must have had lunch, like, inside the rooms or something.
Off the floor, on the floor.
On the floor is what she says.
Okay.
And then she says, but then we get to the question part.
Question.
So get ready.
Okay.
She says, and I'm still worried about black holes. I am worried about black holes because... I can't really describe why. So assuage a little girl's concerns. Does Autumn have reason to be worried about black holes? Yes or no?
I'm really more concerned about her eating off the floor. That's really not good to do.
Did you ever have like a picnic, an indoor picnic as a kid?
But it's not sanitary.
I mean,
were you born
fully, like as a full adult? Like, what
we're going to get sued by their families because we allowed them to eat off the floor. Okay.
Wait. It was a picnic.
All right. I'll move on to the question now.
Yes, please do.
Okay. So black holes.
Yeah.
Should
she's
you be
worried.
Afraid of them?
Like, we're going to get swallowed by one. She's going to fall into one. We're going to get taken over by one. These are all things that are going to keep me up at night now, too.
I think that is I hear this question a lot, actually, because I don't know what it is about the animations they do of black holes or how it's described by the teachers. But, you know, the way you describe a black hole is anything that falls in disappears forever. You fall in, you die, you're gone.
Yeah.
And you're erased.
I can't imagine why she's worked up.
Exactly.
Can't imagine why she's worried.
Exactly. And I think that's a terrible way to teach our second graders about this, because you get them scared needlessly.
She's definitely worried.
While all of that is true.
You're like, make no mistake.
There's a way maybe you should preface that this gigantic, supermassive object that would swallow anything up.
Yeah.
No black holes are anywhere close to us. That's the thing. The closest black hole to us is hundreds and hundreds of light years, even thousands of light years away from us.
Are they moving? Do they move?
They do move through space, but they don't move towards us in any really fast fashion. Like, there's no way a black hole is ever going to come through the solar system. Okay, I shouldn't say ever, but in the next billion years or so, it's not going to happen. And so these black holes are very distant objects. But what's amazing is we can see them from this great distance and be able to detect that they're there, because they're not huge either. They're only about the size of a planet. But yet they have this gravity.
Which planet? Some of the planets are big and some are little.
Of Earth. Let's say you have an Earth-sized black hole.
We would fit right in one, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that's true.
We would fit exactly into one.
But again, remember the
Autumn,
thing.
Call me. I'm worried too now. Okay,
but remember, thousands of light years away. Uh-huh. And so these things are, their reach is not very far. But it's cool that we can detect them from these great distances because of what they do to the stars around them. There are stars that are nearby some of these black holes that get, they move the gases that are around them. But, this is one thing that you do not have to worry about whatsoever, because they are so far away. But they are one of the coolest things to study in the whole universe.
We'll agree to disagree, but okay. Sounds terrifying.
Again, Autumn, don't eat off the floor and don't worry about black holes.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. A big thanks to Ira Flato from Science Friday for joining us. And get in touch with us. We want to hear from you. We are on Facebook, search Looking Up, and Twitter at Looking Up Podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
There you can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we can try to answer them on future episodes.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes and rate us there, or on Stitcher, or check us out at wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terrorbird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer. Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.